Welcome to Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, bitchy, and more. My name is Grant Jacoby.
My name is Bailey Bennett, and never before have I not interrupted you with some weird guttural noise while you were saying our introduction until this moment. I felt like I was quiet for so long.
I mean, we could change that by, you could just chow down on that candy corn that's tempting.
Hell yeah.
It's sitting between us right now.
I mean, last week, we did say we were going to fuck those candy corn haters by getting ourselves a bag and just putting it between us and eating it during an episode. And here we go. I'm going to eat one right now.
I've already had like... I don't even want to look at you doing that, let alone have to hear it. I've already had like probably half a bag, so I'm going to refrain so I don't like vomit mid-episode.
Yeah, I'm not going to have any more. I feel really sick. You're gonna have to talk for a minute. Because
I would just like to say that this is not only just candy corn. Got fucking it's like naturally flavored candy corn, gluten free. From
they're all gluten free. I mean, there's nothing in them.
I mean, it's literally sugar, and as we learned, also some little bit of sesame oil.
Okay, so if you actually can't eat them if you're like allergic to nuts. No,
I don't think sesame is considered a nut.
That in.
I think it's just a, I don't know.
I purchased them at Target yesterday and I literally didn't even, I was still in line at the register when I started eating them because I just could not help myself. So
that was me this morning when I purchased a bag of honey barbecue Fritos.
Oh my God.
From a liquor store.
Grant, those were like my entire childhood.
Really?
Yes, the fucking honey barbecue flavor. They're like every day after school.
Those are my favorite go-to like road trip snacks.
Good.
I mean, and my road trip was all of an hour back from New Jersey, but
right, amazing.
Basically, the moon.
I wanted to tell you that I had a RWF experience in the wild last night.
What?
I don't.
What does that even mean?
I was at a bar and I was meeting a new acquaintance who is very interested in the topics of our podcast.
Oh, okay.
And I was talking to him about it and. He was like, well, what's like, what do you think is like the creepiest episode you've ever done? And I was like, well, a lot of people have told us that like Dear David like really got to them when they were listening to it. And he was like, oh, I don't know what that is.
Oh, no.
So I started explaining it to him and he was very enthralled, like really, really listening. And then one of our other friends like came up behind him to give him like a loving like squeeze on the shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, he jumped like halfway across the bar. Because it was just like perfect, perfect timing. And I was like, yes, this is the content we subscribe for.
Live in living color.
Yes, exactly.
So. I'm actually happy you mentioned Dear David because I was thinking about him the other day. And I was thinking about, because I think when we did that episode, it was like November of last year.
Was it? Oh my God.
It was one of the earlier episodes I think we did.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like, I wonder what's been going on. So I like looked up Moby Dickhead, whatever his name. The answer is not a whole lot.
Oh, really?
I mean, there's more.
He's still keeping
no,
it up.
He. I think around the time we did the episode, he probably tweeted about it for another like month or two, with more experiences of seeing David, or allegedly.
Uh-huh.
And then he like had a recent tweet that was like, thanks for watching. Like, I'm moving on to like other things and watching, but still like maintaining that he's like, oh, this is totally real.
And yeah,
like,
and you're like, I have chosen to move on. Although, you know, a ghost is haunting me, so that's kind of you can't really just like choose to move on from that. But okay, cool.
I don't know. I will still always have affection in my heart for Dear David, but
same.
At the same time, it just got a little much. Once like the hearse and the warehouse got involved.
Well, once there were like all of the photos where you could just like brighten it a little bit and be like, oh, a doll. Cool.
But a really yucky looking doll.
Like a really gross doll. Great.
So I also have a listener email that I want to share with you.
Okay, great.
In response to our episode about the Whaley House. So this is from Allie, and this is her story.
Tell me more.
So she writes, in 2015, my dear friend got married in San Diego. Most of the guests, myself and husband included, stayed at the Best Western Plus Hacienda Old Town, which is just down the street from the Whaley House. Mm-hmm. On one of the days that I, my husband, and some friends had free before the wedding, we decided to check out the house. I love historical sites and antiques, so I was excited even before I found out about the hauntings, and the house didn't disappoint, in a manner of speaking. There was an oppressive atmosphere in the house from the moment we walked in. One of my friends and I just felt heavy, like we were walking through mud. That vibe did not go away for the entirety of the visit. We started by going through the general store and courthouse areas, but when our group went to go through the door to the dining room, I stopped dead. I felt almost like there was a barrier in the doorway keeping me out. Eventually, I got it together and went through, but as I did, I couldn't shake the feeling I was going to walk into something. When I asked a staff member about it later, I was told that doorway had a plexiglass panel in it for many years where people could view the dining room but not enter. Weird.
So that's okay.
Like, I'm more like, why would you have this like an indoor window?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess. In the dining room, both my friend and I had a small green orb appear in our photos. I tried from a lot of angles with different lighting and took pictures of other rooms to check out if the orb was my camera, but it did not.
Ooh.
Upon exiting the dining room, we pass into the hall that contains the stairs leading up to the second floor. This is a very comprehensive email.
Okay, good.
At the base of the stairs near the back bedroom, there's a big door. The door was locked shut tight with no possibility of opening it at all, but I was overwhelmed by the feeling that the door would come banging at any moment and I should not stand in front of it. The feeling went away when we went upstairs, but returned when we came down again. I was later told that it was the door that Mr. Whaley used to bring his daughter inside after she attempted to take her life in an outer building.
What?
I don't know.
Did that happen?
I guess.
Oh, I guess we missed some stuff on our research.
Probably. I mean,
which is shocking.
Color me shocked. In the theater, there was definitely a feeling of being watched. I strongly felt like someone was standing in the wings of the stage watching my friends and I, but there was nobody there. There was no angle that anyone could have hidden either. When we returned downstairs and we started talking to the staff, I started to panic about the things I was feeling. I'm not too proud to admit that I speed walked out of the house to wait for my friends. However, the experience in the house wasn't the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing came after. Later that day, when we were walking to dinner, there was all this water in the street. It was like rushing down the street, even when we were over in Old Town. The source was the hydrant on the corner next to the Whaley House, which had burst mere hours after our visit. Ooh. I know that stuff like that happens, but it freaked me out. It freaked me out more the next day when I recounted the story at the wedding reception to another guest and a panel like shot off the nearest heater. Metal expands, I get that, but it was the moment I told the story. Mm. So that's my Whaley House tale. Stay spooky, Allie.
Ooh, that's so exciting that she actually got to go there because... I don't know if you guys know this, but we love to talk about how we're going to visit haunted sites and we literally never do it. So,
well, it's not like you walk out down the street and you're like, oh, here's a haunted building. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of haunted buildings in New York, probably the house that we're in right now.
Probably. I mean, there are tons of abandoned buildings around, but I think if you go inside, the kind of horrors you're going to see are not ghosts, but probably just like rats and mm-hmm. trash.
And probably some syringes.
Probably. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well thanks Allie
for
writing in. I totally got that, like when you're in a scenario and you're like, I don't have an explanation why I feel this mm-hmm. dread, but I do.
Yeah. I love that. I also love how she was like, I just wanted to visit the house for the antiques, but then like the ghosts were an added bonus.
But yeah, if any of you listeners out there have similar or interesting ghost stories or encounters, experiences in haunted houses, please email us.
Yes,
them to us.
Please,
because
let us
we
know.
Always love to hear about,
especially as Halloween approaches.
I know. Oh, I can feel
honestly,
it.
Guys, email us like your best Halloween story. I would love to hear what you dressed up as a child. I mean, I know I went as a princess for like 7 or 8 years in a row because let's be real.
Like, why not?
I am. What? Always with a turtleneck underneath because those frigid nights. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, I know the photo in question that I've seen of you rocking that that fashion choice.
Yes, yes. Well, it wasn't my choice, but it was someone's choice.
Yeah.
Great. I also had a quick thing that I wanted to tell you guys about that I think a lot of our listeners would like. I don't know. Well, Grant is aware, but my birthday was earlier this month. I was in Rome on the day. So I really can't complain.
So you were like bored.
So bored. But my wonderful boyfriend, Kyle, got me a very on-brand gift.
Oh, okay.
We've talked about the lineup on this podcast before, which is a website that does a great job doing our research for us. No, but we have definitely used a lot of articles from their site to help us talk about creepy things. And they also cover like ghosts and murders and all manner of dark things. And they have something called a Creepy Crate, which is like a subscription to just like a mystery box filled with what they call macabre oddities. How do you say that? Macabre?
I think it's just macabre. But I like the
cool. I wanted to give each syllable its due, you know. Macabre oddities and collectibles every other month. It's guaranteed to make your life a little creepier.
Oh.
And each one has exclusive limited edition collectibles. There's a book in every box. And I haven't gotten my first one yet, but like there have been just like a Ouija board t-shirt, gummy candy body parts, welcome to my murder house coaster set. I'm really interested in the Twilight Hotel horror comic book. Oh, the Who Killed Richard Carter mystery experience. I don't know what any of these things are, but I am so looking forward to receiving my first box.
I don't know what any of these are, but I want all of them.
Yes, and there's unboxing videos and everything. Oh my God. But I am definitely going to share it with you guys once I finally receive it.
Please do.
And I'll let you know if my life is more haunted than it is already.
That is a very specific niche.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you would all say that word?
And yes.
I've niche. Heard a lot recently people saying niche.
No, I don't support
and,
that.
It's
just the way I don't, so I don't support macabre. Okay. It is. It is for a very specific type of person. But I think it's becoming more and more clear that there are a lot of those types of people out there.
Yes. I feel like in recent years, it's been a gateway of freaks like us and like you.
Yes.
Our dear listeners. So kudos for Creepy Crate for being able to monetize a business.
Yeah, please. Unlike us who can't monetize for shit. Do you want to talk about some bitches?
Sure.
We haven't even... Yeah, go ahead. Let's do that first, and then we'll get into this week's topic.
Okay. So my bitch of the week, this is kind of a downer, if you will.
Cool.
So when this episode drops, it'll been like a week or two since Maren Maisie, who is one of my favorite Broadway actresses, mm-hmm. passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she died a couple days ago. She was 57 years old and she had ovarian cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, like a pretty long battle with ovarian cancer. And she was just one of those people. And I've actually been thinking about this a lot, is I feel like a lot of Broadway actors and actresses don't get a lot of, they don't get the some types of credit they deserve for how fucking talented they are. And she was really one of the greats. And she originated the role of Mother in Ragtime, and she was in Spamalot and most recently The King and I. And I actually had the pleasure of meeting her.
Oh, that's awesome.
I guess like 8 or 9 years ago, my brother was in a production of Streetcar Named Desire out in a regional theater in Massachusetts, and she was playing Blanche DuBois, and she was incredible. Oh, wow. And had the best wigs. And
yeah, that's amazing.
She was very, very nice when I met her. And then I had a couple years later, I interned at a theater company and got to meet her again through a gala that was she was performing at. And she's just a really lovely person and just so fucking talented. And it just... Cancer sucks, and I realize that's like the most like obvious statement, but
But there's a constant reminder of it because it just keeps fucking happening. So,
but I just hope that, you know, I mean, I'm sure her legacy will live on through her fans and people who have loved her. And so, if you're a Broadway fan or just like to hear some talented singing, take a minute of your day and listen to the wonderful sounds of Maren Maisie, because she was really one of the greats and she will be missed.
Yeah. I wasn't super familiar with her work, but I definitely have seen in the last few days people just sharing a lot of stories about her and sharing how much they loved her and how inspirational she was to them. So Mine is less of a downer.
Good.
But
turn it around.
Okay, so I'm pretty positive that you already did the Fab Five as one of your bitches, like,
I did
a while ago. But I like really specifically wanted to call out Jonathan Van Ness.
Okay.
Because
I fully support this.
I mean, first of all, because he's an amazing queen. But just recently, especially with the Emmys and like award season coming up, and he's been attending a lot more like red carpet events and like really super public events, and just absolutely rocking like sheer dresses and like high-heeled boots. And I mean, looking like I will never look in my life.
Oh yeah.
But
you will never look like that.
No, and that is totally fine. Thank you. Grant is currently fanning me with a folder and I really appreciate it. But that also means that he, of course, has to deal with haters who like can't understand the fact that a man would like wear a dress or a high-heeled boot because, yeah. I mean, gender is so just structured and stiff. So I've just been noticing some comments on his Instagram lately because people are fucking idiots. But there was one specifically, there's like a picture of him with Millie Bobby Brown recently, which is the most iconic thing that's ever happened.
A culture clash.
Yeah. But someone commented on it being like, okay, so you're wearing a dress and like feminine boots and you're like rocking a full beard, dot, dot, dot. Like they were just like, what are you doing? And he just responded, cute, right? And everyone was like fucking loving it because I don't understand why we can't just like let people live their lives, especially people who are doing a lot of good in the world and who are so fucking amazing. So I just want to call him out because I can't get enough of him on social media and in every aspect of his life. So.
Yeah, he's fucking fantastic. And yeah, I mean, I hope that his presence in kind of the pop culture will change people's minds about gender fluidity in terms of fashion and beyond.
Yes.
Because, yeah, at the end of the day, like, who the fuck cares? You're not hurting anyone. Like, you should be able to wear whatever the fuck you want and be whoever the fuck you want.
Yes. Thank you for articulating what I cannot articulate right now. When Grant arrived today, I let him know that this is one of the most tired I've ever been during a recording. But I'm, like, ready to step it up. I've consumed enough candy corn to make me feel ill/awake.
Yeah. That'll do it. If you need me to just to kind of beat you over the head with this folder.
I would love you to do that. Thank you. Today is actually kind of a special episode, which we haven't done in a minute. Mm-hmm. These are more of our like discussion based episodes that we like to throw in every once in a while because, believe it or not, we actually really like talking to each other and not just at each other. I mean, I'll speak for myself, but so today. This is a topic near and dear to our hearts.
It is.
We want to dive in to the topic of vampires today. Mm-hmm. And we originally debated doing an entire episode about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Spoiler alert, it's a show we like.
That's okay.
You might even say it's everything to me and more, but we'll probably do a poll on our Instagram to find out if that's something that you guys would actually be interested in. But we thought it might be a little bit polarizing just because a lot of you aren't here for us to talk about Sarah Michelle Gellar, but maybe a lot of you are. So let us know if that's something that you would like us to really dive into it, and if you guys are also fans. But for now, we kind of just want to talk about the phenomenon of vampires as a whole, and also talk about Buffy. Like, don't even fucking worry about that. So if you guys heard us talk about get drunk and talk about horror movies, we're going to do that, except that we're just going to eat candy corn and talk about vampires. I have kind of come prepared with some research to get us started and a little bit of a framework. So I think to start off, we're going to ask the question and try to answer the question, why are vampires such an important part of pop culture, and how did this all kind of happen? Because I think it's been pretty obvious within the last few decades that vampires have, for some reason, taken over pop culture in terms of film and TV, and it's just become a huge phenomenon. which obviously wasn't always the case. So we'll talk about that and then kind of go through maybe just a brief timeline of like vampires in film and TV. And then just kind of dive into what our favorites are and why we love them and talk a little bit about kind of like the differences in vampire lore from show to show, because I think that can actually be really interesting as well. But we'll get to that at the end. Cool. So I'll get us started. I'm just going to keep on fucking talking. Do you have something you want to add?
No.
Okay, great.
For once.
Great. So I looked at a lot of cool sources for this, really good sources. But I got a lot of information from an article by Lindsay Bradshaw at Texas Tech University and a woman named... sorry. And a woman,
how do you spell that?
A woman named Jessica Dodge, who wrote a story on myth in pop culture, The Vampire. And yeah, so the clear origin of vampires isn't entirely known, but the most popular understanding is that vampires originated in Eastern Europe, specifically in Transylvania, which is obviously, you know, somewhere we've heard of. However, many other cultures also feature this kind of blood-sucking or life-draining human type creature in their myths. So, you know, I didn't want to go too far back. I don't want to bore you, but it's also important to note that folklore vampires were really nothing like the modern perception of them today, which isn't entirely surprising, but I actually didn't know this. Folklore vampires are actually very similar to our modern interpretation of zombies. So apparently they were very like bloody, decaying, disgusting creatures who like would feed off of humans to survive and like kind of walked the earth like barely living corpses, which is really kind of how we look at zombies today.
It's how I look at myself in the mirror.
Well, that's true. But and zombie culture also is kind of thriving at this moment.
It is, oddly enough.
I can't get on quite on as much on board with that, but you know, we can talk about that later. So the Gothic horror novel Dracula obviously did much to change our perception of what vampires are and to usher us into a more modern interpretation of this specific creature. Bram Stoker's classic story, which came out in 1897, was set in Transylvania, and it established a lot of the conventions of vampire fantasy that would come after it. It established the vampire still as a serious threat, but one who was dark and mysterious and like a little bit sexy. Have you read it?
No.
I'm pretty sure that I did. I'm not positive. I did a lot of half reading when I was an English major, but I'm pretty sure I have read this one. But so we see his interactions with women and the strange connection that comes from like sharing blood. So I think this is kind of one of the first instances where we see like this male vampire interacting with like the innocent female and having that kind of like sexualized relationship. And this novel would, of course, later be adapted many times, first with the unauthorized version, which was Nosferatu in 1922, then with the very famous version with Bela Lugosi in the starring role in 1931, and then Francis Ford Coppola would create his own version in 1992, which featured an all-star cast of Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder, Anthony Hopkins, and Keanu Reeves.
Oh.
Which I have never seen.
I haven't either.
But have you seen... I saw, like, Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder have been doing all these interviews together recently because they're in that, like, rom-com together. I don't remember what it's called. Something about, like, being dates at a wedding, which, like, never been done before.
Yeah, what? really knows.
But they're talking about how they like have had a crush on each other since they did Dracula together.
Oh wow.
It's like I'm living for it. You should really.
That's cute.
Yeah, look it up, guys. But so this film kind of further pushed vampire lore into modern day pop culture. So, you guys, good news, Grant is sweating profusely.
Oh my god. Thank you for pointing out.
I mean, I didn't want to bring it up because like we hadn't talked about the weather yet this episode, but like
I was actually
looks
really
uncomfortable.
I was really proud of myself for arriving not entirely sweaty until we've now been sitting in a room with no airflow.
Yeah, because we do it for you, bitches. Okay. So I'm just gonna keep talking. Anything to add? Any questions, comments?
No, you keep going.
Okay, great.
You're doing great.
So throughout the 20th century, vampires grew in popularity. And however, as the 2012 article by Lindsay Bradshaw that I brought up earlier points out, vampires were certainly still feared. This is a quote. As more novels and plays were written throughout the 20th century, the vampire was often either the villain to be slayed or an appealing mystery. The dividing perception often changed with gender. Women were attracted to the dark, seductive vampires, while men often preferred to view them as a monster, as something to be killed. Which I actually think completely tracks, like, to this day of, like, how vampires are treated in any and all culture. It's always like the woman is, like, secretly attracted and the guys are like, kill that thing.
Yeah, really repulsed.
Yeah, cool. Vampire expert Aaron Colopy, who is an associate professor in Texas Tech University's College of Arts and Sciences, because now it's like you can fucking be a vampire expert as, like, a fucking real job and just, like, teach classes about vampires. I know.
Doesn't also, like, UCLA or some shit have an entire class dedicated to Beyonce?
Yes.
Great.
Yes. Remember they had a vampires class that at our college the year after I graduated. I, like, nearly, like, quit my job and went back to school.
Like, just really need to be a super senior so I can take this class.
Like, really, like, you guys don't understand. But Aaron Colopy says, I think the reason vampires are so popular is because they are such an effective metaphor for our own anxieties and desires, which I think is very interesting. And he says, we often try to work things out about ourselves through them, which, like, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, it seems deeper than anything I've, like, ever spent time thinking about while watching Buffy, but, like, sure. Then author Jessica Dodge also points out another common trope that helps us explain our fascination with vampire culture, which is our relationship with grief and loss. I think what she says about this is actually really interesting, so I'm just going to, like, read it verbatim.
Okay.
But she says, we are drawn to vampire stories because we want to know how they conquer extreme grief. Each vampire has a story about how they ended their experience with the immortal night and survived hell. We want to know what they did to become human after such terrible trauma, and we want them to succeed. That is why we seek them out and glorify the horror. It is the human condition to experience loss and grief. So if a character can reach the depths of hellish darkness and return, then we can too. Through this lens, the vampire could be seen as a symbol of hope and faith. If a person so horrible can regain their humanity, then we are not hopeless cases either. It is in this way that the monstrous vampire can reflect the best and worst of humanity and ultimately the human condition.
Oh, this shit is academic.
I know.
Wow.
And I think this one I feel like is super true to Buffy, especially with Angel and Spike, which we'll talk about more later. But they are very much like, there's this constant struggle with monstrosity and humanity, which I think can be, like, very... can really hold up an interesting lens to humanity as well.
Yeah.
I'm almost done here with the talking portion and then we can actually start discussion. But so a brief timeline of vampires in film and TV. We have Bram Stoker's Dracula in 1992, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer film in 1992 as well, Interview with a Vampire in 1994, Buffy the television show, The Holy Grail, in 1997, followed by Angel in 1999, then The Blade Saga starring Wesley Snipes beginning in 1999, which I've never seen.
I have not either.
Yeah.
I've seen Interview with a Vampire like 100 years ago.
I actually haven't.
Very good.
Cool.
From what I remember. It was also on TV. Like,
of course. Yeah. And you're like, I need to see Tom Cruise kissing a child.
Yeah.
Cool.
Much to unpack there at a later date.
The Twilight films beginning in 2008. True Blood also beginning in 2008. And then the Vampire Diaries in 2009. Obviously, this is not an exhaustive list, but these are some of the series that made kind of the biggest splash in the vampire world at the time. So in the last few decades is when we've seen the lore change from vampires being purely villains to having a more tortured inner struggle, often brought on by the love of a human woman. So that is my very long intro.
I love it. It's very comprehensive.
Thank you. But so I guess, like, we can talk about our more personal experiences with vampire lore and our personal favorite vampires out there and why we love them.
Would you like me to start?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah, I've really been talking for a while.
Well, I think I mean, for me, it's going to have to start with Buffy. And I think that
it starts and ends with Buffy. I mean, everything is.
It all comes full circle.
It all comes back to Buffy.
Because for me, I think what really drew me into that show and kind of the lore of it was kind of the idea of being attracted to the darkness and that mm-hmm. there's something. And why I've always kind of enjoyed the horror genre is because it's not even so much the act of being scared that I enjoy, but it's like, it's a way of working out your anxieties mm-hmm. and your fears by being able to actually like name them and place them against a fictional medium.
Right.
While also being simultaneously like feminist and badass mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera.
Of course.
So, I mean, for me, it's always going to be about Angel. And I think that that character, I know you and I disagree on this, but I think that like, especially as, because I probably started watching Buffy when I was 12, 11. Mm-hmm. And being a little gaby, I think it was all like, not only was it something like I enjoyed for the content, I also just like really enjoyed seeing David Boreanaz shirtless, even though sure. I couldn't really quite name it at the time.
Sure. Okay.
And yeah, that idea of, you know, you have this bad guy, but he's really nice, but then he becomes bad again. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but he's still like sexy. And there's still that kind of like, yeah, that line blurred between like scary and sexy was always very, I think that's always been kind of obviously, as you mentioned, a thing with vampires is kind of that. And especially later in things like True Blood, mm-hmm. where the act of sucking blood goes beyond something like mm-hmm. murder, it becomes sex.
Right. Absolutely. No, I completely agree. And I kind of have, I obviously have a lot of the same feelings about the Buffy series. Although, yes, Grant and I really differ on the Spike versus Angel debate. I mean, I love Angel as well, although I never watched Angel the series because
I mean, it's you're not missing much.
He wasn't as compelling to me as a character because for me he is actually missing some of the darkness that I think Spike brings mm-hmm. to the table. And I think like because yes, like Angel turns evil for, you know, whatever reason. But I never believed it as much as I did with Spike. And I believed Spike's redemption arc so much more. And I believed his struggle so much more.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. But I think that is like the most compelling part about both characters. And I think, again, is a trope that we see outside of vampire lore a lot, which is kind of like that anti-hero or not even like really a hero, but it's just like there's something so much more interesting about a character that is complicated in that way and who's struggling with like their inner humanity or lack thereof. And that's a big struggle for both of them because one of the big things about Buffy, and I guess I don't know if it's specified in other vampire culture, but in Buffy specifically, vampires do not have a soul. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that keeps coming up and, you know, isn't the most realistic. Like, I don't know what it means to live without a soul, but I think it's
probably to kill without having any sort of conscience.
Right.
Exactly. Basically, they're just sociopaths.
Yes. And so much of Buffy is
not to call all sociopaths.
No, but a lot of Buffy is a metaphor, and I think,
yes,
you know, that definitely fits with that. So it's really interesting to see them, you know, struggle with those kinds of things, and both of them end up regaining their soul at some point during the series. No spoilers. I guess we should have really prefaced this that there's going to be spoilers, but
I don't think you can really apologize for spoiling a TV show that went off the air 15 years ago.
You're right. Okay, I'm going to just trudge on then.
that's my personal opinion on it. But.
Yeah, but I think, especially with Spike, I always thought the fact that he was able, as unrealistic as this is, that he was able to love and to find like kindness and to find warmth without having regained his soul yet mm-hmm. Was always like the most interesting to me, that he could kind of overcome what he was to be more of a human because of loving someone.
Well, I think that's something that narratively is interesting, and I think it parallels to True Blood with mm-hmm. Bill and Eric, as you establish this first romantic yes. lead. And you establish the kind of the lore around it. So, for example, with Angel, you have that he is nice because yeah. he has a soul, and then he loses his soul and he's yeah. evil, and then he gets it back, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So then when you have the introduction of a new vampire character, it's like, well, you can't do that. So then right. you have kind of the reverse arc where it's like, he's evil, mm-hmm. but then you see him kind of redeem himself, mm-hmm. even though he doesn't have a soul.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Which is like, I'm
imagining like being on the other side of the door right now, like listening to us talking, and we sound fucking insane.
I know. We're like, we are getting really fucking academic about something that is like fucking stupid. But whatever. I don't care. I love this shit.
Me too.
No, and I think what I think is so funny is, well, I use Buffy as the jumping off point for everything. And I'm sure there are, you know, there were works of fiction before Buffy that I'm sure helped influence Buffy as well. But for me, it feels like Buffy has influenced like every other piece of vampire culture that's ever happened, because mm-hmm. especially the Angel and Spike characters, because mm-hmm. yes, the exact same thing basically happens in True Blood, where mm-hmm. Anna Paquin's character meets... Suki meets Bill, who is basically Angel, just mm-hmm. like a very like, you know, a neutered version of a vampire who like tries. Does Bill? I can't remember. Bill does feast on humans, because Angel tries to only feast on animal blood.
Well, with True Blood, it's been a hot minute since I watched True Blood, but there's a whole thing with them like. Because the actual, like, what True Blood was like, this, like, mm-hmm. synthetic
right,
blood.
Right.
So, like, vampires were able to...
Oh, yes. He was, I think, subsisting off of True Blood when she first meets him. So he is, like, a good version, and they obviously fall in love right away, which is very similar to Buffy and Angel, and, like, they're soulmates and whatever. And then the bad boy character comes in and kind of rustles everything up with Eric, who's Alexander Skarsgård's character, and just, like... the man of my dreams. No.
You know, I've seen him. I walked by him.
Oh my God. Really? Was he taller than you?
I knew you were going to ask that. Also, I just like to say Bailey's face just like fell to new depths of shock. And,
I was really excited about that. I really loved
it. Yeah. I was on East 4th Street. This was like 7 years ago. And, I was working this event, and he was like an outdoor like festival, and mm-hmm. he was like walking down the street, and I was like, it was one of those things where I was like, oh my God, that looks just like Alexander Skarsgård. And he gets closer, and I was like, nope, that is shit. I am taller than he is.
Okay
I can confirm.
That's okay, cool.
He's probably like 6'4".
Okay,
so but, like next to Anna Paquin, who's probably like 5'1".
Yes, very small person. But
well, yeah, but I also think what you're describing right now in these is just kind of like, it's like the classic.
Sure.
It's a classic love triangle. And yeah. It's the classic kind of like, you know, you establish that these two characters are meant to be together, but they obviously, the whole series can't just be about them in love. So you need to throw in a wrench, which usually is kind of the foil of the original character or the original member of the, I guess in this context, that's the male, the straight male lead.
Right.
So I kind of lost my train of thought, but like,
yeah, but basically Buffy didn't establish this.
No, but triangle. It established the supernatural mm-hmm. element within that. Sure. Because I think that, yeah.
Well, Vampire Diaries also does basically the same thing.
They're brothers, right?
Yes. I haven't watched as much. I watched like a few episodes of the Vampire Diaries before I was like, you know what? I'm better than this. Yeah. And I stopped. But then I did watch like some YouTube videos because I wanted to find out what happened at the end. So I watched some like summary videos.
Have you seen Twilight? Have you read Twilight?
Oh, yes. We're about to talk about Twilight. Going to say, yes, in Vampire Diaries, they are brothers. One of them is like good and nice and they immediately fall in love. And then the bad boy brother comes in and blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Twilight is a whole... This is just like a whole different thing.
Yeah, Twilight for me, a different color. It's like not even vampires.
Twilight for me, yeah, it really like a stain on the world of vampire culture. Go ahead.
Well, sorry, I was going to say that I think with each iteration of vampire lore or a series, I feel like they usually try to establish a new rule, mm-hmm. like a new twist on the classic. You know, vampires can't be in the sunlight. They mm-hmm. can't. They don't like garlic. They don't like crosses. They don't like,
I mean, those are the metal ones. Metal. Yeah. I don't know.
And so Buffy kind of, I feel like is the classic, like, let's stake through the heart. Duh. We'll kill them.
Whoops.
Then you have something like True Blood, which kind of plays off it, but then like The reason I could never fuck with Twilight is because it just was like everything was dumb. It was like
everything was so dumb.
It's like, oh, we can actually go, like, when we go in the sun, we don't burst into flames, we sparkle.
I was like, who the fuck approved that decision? Like, you have to be fucking kidding. That is not real.
It's very, very, very gay.
Yes. and I just think that, I mean, every, like, inherently when you have, like, this female character who's kind of drawn to the darkness and drawn to these, like, bad boy figures and, like, has this sexual desire to be with the undead, like, that's, mm-hmm. you know, it is what it is. But there's a version of that. There's the Buffy version of that where, like, yes, she's letting herself succumb to something that she probably shouldn't, but she also is a badass, like, feminist, butt-kicking, amazing woman who, like, can really fucking hold her own. And even, like, even in True Blood, I mean, Sookie's character is, there are things to debate with that, but she at least, she could speak for herself. She can take care of herself. She is her own person.
And she has her own powers of her own.
Yes, she has powers of her own, and Buffy has the same, which fairy? I think, yes, which is, yes. But with Twilight, they stripped Bella of any kind of agency, any kind of power, any kind of interest or desire outside of Edward Cullen. And I just can't get on board with a character like that who, like, in the second Twilight book, when he leaves her because he's, like, endangering her, she literally just, like, keeps trying to kill herself because mm-hmm. she can't live without him, mm-hmm. which I don't think is a great message for young girls or for anyone really to be reading, that you cannot survive without your man who inherently wants to suck your blood.
Well, I think with Twilight, and this isn't really, like, the episode where we just have, like, shit on Stephanie Meyer and, like,
I mean,
her body of work, but I think that there is something very, it honestly, what Twilight kind of feels like is, like, someone started writing some fucking
fan fiction.
Yeah. And it just got really out of control and there was, like, no editing.
Yeah. And then that's literally what happened with 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. It was Twilight's fanfic, right?
Yeah. Like, it couldn't get worse. Couldn't get much worse than that. But yeah, I hate Bella Swan's character. I hate Edward Cullen also sucks. Like, I'm absolutely team Jacob, and I don't know why you wouldn't be, because he
the werewolf.
Mm-hmm. And he, yeah, they make a huge deal about them being, like, vegetarian vampires, but, like, still every time he, like, smells Bella.
That's my favorite scene. Mm-hmm. Maybe, like, one of the worst scenes in cinema history is when she walks into that fucking science class and he has a reaction as if he has smelled, like, the worst thing in the world. And it's just like, so, oh, girl, hilarious. Like, that bitch stinks.
Yes.
It's so, oh my God. Stupid.
And I love, like, every interview with Robert Pattinson where he just like regrets everything about that series, and same with Kristen Stewart.
Oh, yeah,
he just, like, so they just have tried to distance themselves from it so much,
as they should.
It's bad. It's really
so
bad. And there's nothing I hate more than the, like, celibacy narrative that runs throughout it, where he's like, I just can't control myself to have sex with you, like, I'll kill you.
Yeah. I'm like, so I think she becomes a vampire.
She does.
So they can fuck.
Yes.
Which is, like,
pretty much, yeah.
Really great.
Oh, she becomes a vampire because she doesn't want to give up her vampire baby that's killing her internally. Okay? So there's that. But the becoming a vampire thing is really interesting, because that's also another thing that I love about Buffy and about True Blood, is that mm-hmm. these are not stories where women give up their humanity to mm-hmm. be with these men, as much as they have the opportunity a lot of the time.
Yeah, and believe, well, and whatever, spoiler, who cares? In the end of both series, both Buffy and Sookie mm-hmm. end up either not with someone mm-hmm. or with, I mean, I think, I never finished True Blood.
Okay, True Blood's finale is not,
I've heard it's one of the worst.
It's actually really horrible. Like, she basically ends up with
a random
human guy who we don't even know who he is. And the final scene is them, like, having a Thanksgiving party together with, like, everyone from the series being like, I'm so happy now that I'm normal. And it's like, okay, but this whole show is about, like, not being normal and how it's okay to not be normal. So that wasn't my favorite thing, but I also didn't necessarily want her to turn into a vampire, because that's not my favorite thing either. But the Buffy ending is the best of all worlds, where she's just like, actually, I'm good just like on my own.
Yeah, I've got some shit to sort out. And like,
yeah,
which if you think about the timeline in her age, by the end of season 7, she's probably 22. Mm-hmm. So of course she's not gonna be like, time to settle down with my immortal boyfriend, right? And he can just like watch me get old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the other thing, we've already kind of touched on it a bit, but the other thing I kind of want to talk about are these differences in all of the series. Like we talked about in Twilight, they sparkle, but it's just like, it really is this weird evolution. Well, in Buffy, you know, they can't go out in the daylight, but mm-hmm. there are these like caveats where Spike can like wear a big coat and like run fast, yeah. And like he'll be fine.
Whereas, just be like a little smoky.
Yeah. Whereas in True Blood, it's like if they go out into the sunlight, it truly is like their death.
Well, also with True Blood, you know, with Buffy, when they are staked or go out in the sun, mm-hmm. they combust into dust.
Yes.
Whereas in True Blood, they combust into like blood and gore.
Yeah, like guts.
Nasty.
It's fucking nasty. But I actually like, I kind of don't mind it, because I think that show is more like macabre, to use mm-hmm. our buzzword of the week. Where yeah, it was it that show is gory as fuck. Like there is blood everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like in Buffy, for a show that's about vampires, like there really isn't that much blood.
It'll be like a little like trickle, like yeah. on the neck, and it'll be like like kind of like if you just like cut yourself shaving. Whereas yeah. True Blood, it's like splattering.
They're like
off
having
walls.
Sex in a pool of blood mm-hmm. is like ugh. Their mode.
I need to rewatch that show.
Oh. I fucking love True Blood. Like, well, I love it.
I think the first season of True Blood is one of the best first seasons of a TV show ever.
Yes.
And then
it gets pretty bad.
It gets
TBH. But yeah. it's still very enjoyable to watch. I love Anna Paquin and Stephen Moyer. Remember when they liked my tweet, both of them? Mm-hmm. I thought you forgot, so I should probably bring it up again. But they're like my favorite couple ever. I'm like obsessed with Alexander Skarsgård again.
It's a great cast. Deborah Ann Wall is great. Yes. I mean, we have small guest arcs from Evan Rachel Wood and Lizzie Kaplan. And
Evan Rachel Wood on that show is like
so hot.
My lesbian awakening, honestly. But then after that, we get...
Oh, and Rutina Wesley, who I fucking
love.
Fucking love her.
Love her.
Although, oh God, the care of Tara is so all over the place.
It's horrible. I'm so sorry, Tara. But then after that, we get Twilight, where it's like... They can go out into the sun, but they like glitter a little bit. And also like they can live in Portland because it's cloudy, or like wherever the fuck they live.
Forks,
Seattle.
Forks, Washington.
And they can just be outside all the time. And then in Vampire Diaries, I'm pretty sure they just are all, they're just fine being outside in the daytime always. As far as I know. I mean, I obviously don't know that show as well, but like...
Yeah, someone tell us. Whereas, actually care enough to. I think I watched like the first 15 minutes of the pilot, like, and then it was just like, what's her name? Nina...
Dobrev.
Yeah, just like in like by her school locker being like, oh, my parents are dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it was like...
Pretty much the whole show. whereas in True Blood, they're like, okay, time to go to bed. Like they literally go in the basement and get into a coffin. Mm-hmm. I'm like, great.
That's amazing.
But I also think it's really funny that modern day vampire shows kind of just like pick and choose what vampire lore they think is like the sexiest and coolest, which is why like garlic really never comes into the picture, because they're like, that's not sexy.
Nothing sexy about garlic.
But like being burned by a cross, like they'll still use that. Or even like the drinking of the blood, I feel like mm-hmm. is dealt with really differently on different shows. Like we were talking about on True Blood, they love blood on that show. And it's a really big deal when you like exchange blood. And when you, mm-hmm. when a human drinks the blood of a vampire, then they like start to desire that person. And it forms a lot of bonds on that show.
But you don't become a vampire.
You don't become a vampire.
Whereas in Buffy, in order to become a vampire, they need to drink your blood, and then you drink their blood. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on True Blood, it's like you have to do the blood exchange, but then they like bury you overnight, or you have to drink. I think you have to like they have to you have to be completely drained of blood. I don't know. It's that's an interesting one as well, where some shows really take the time to like describe how you become a vampire, and some of them really just gloss over it.
They're kind of like, yeah, I mean, there's some blood and there's more blood and coffins and blood and you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. And on Buffy, none of our major characters, as far as I can remember, really become a vampire within the course of the show, besides like Harmony.
Woo!
Whereas like in True Blood,
that's a good point.
Actually. It's something that happens like kind of frequently. I guess
really, Tara.
Just Tara. Is it just Tara?
Well, that's the big one.
Yeah.
But the thing with Tara that also it's like rewriting the rules is again, spoiler alert. When she gets shot in the head.
Yeah, like, she's, like, basically dead.
Like, full on, like,
yeah,
head is gone.
Yeah.
And then they're still able to turn her, which really is...
I know, it is. But it is, like, I think it's an interesting metaphor for, like, the exchanging of bodily fluids.
Oh, der.
It's just, like, sex. Mm-hmm. And I also just really quick need to bring up the most iconic sex scene of all time, when Bill climbs out of his grave covered in dirt, grabs Sookie's leg as she's crawling away, and they start to immediately fuck from his grave in the dirt. And then I just was watching it and I was like, who am I? Like, what do I like?
Well, I think, yeah, I think in a lot of ways it exposes kind of these like various like sexual situations that are like masked as macabre or dangerous or, so you do have that kind of like, oh, I shouldn't be turned on right now. But considering a lot, like 99% of the sex on True Blood is heterosexual sex, there was a lot of times where it just was like, am I just watching softcore porn?
Right, yeah, except for the scene between fucking Eric and Sookie's brother.
Yeah, it's so brief, though, and, like, they, like, maybe kiss.
Oh, they do. We need to watch it again because maybe. I can't stop.
But it's also a dream, and it's, like...
Yeah, yes, absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, everything kind of about vampire culture is us just embracing like our fucking weirdness and like the fact that we are turned on by like weird, dark, creepy shit. Clearly, if you're listening to this podcast, like you can relate.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it's become like very mainstream. But when you actually go back and kind of look at the lore behind it and like what's actually happening in these series, it's really interesting because it's like, I'm really rooting for this couple to get together, but that guy is definitely a monster who kills people and drinks their blood. So, gotta love it.
Gotta love it.
Do you have anything else to add about vampires today?
I don't think so. It is interesting because I think that about 10 years ago, there really was this, I think with Twilight and True Blood, there was this like resurgence of people being really excited about vampires. Mm-hmm. And then Vampire Diaries happened. And you're right, then it kind of transitioned, I think, into zombies,
kind of.
Well, I guess just The Walking Dead and
there's also like iZombie, yeah. But I don't know what's. I don't really know what's next. Warm Bodies, also.
Oh, I liked Warm Bodies.
I liked that too. I liked it too.
What I just want to see is just ghosts, ghost sex.
Yes, I mean they did that in kind of. They kind of did that in Ghost, but yeah.
Kind of. But I want to see like full on like ghost blowjob.
There's something less sexy about ghosts though, because something like it's like a vampire is still like very human, or at least the way that they're reimagined now, they're very human, and there's just like something a little dark and mysterious and off about them. Whereas a ghost, it's like I'm not exactly sure how I'm gonna have sex with like this see-through.
Yeah, this translucent like entity.
Where are our sexual organs going to be?
Although if you're a Dr. Izzy Stevens on Grey's Anatomy, you have no problem.
Oh my God, never seen it.
Oh, there's full-on ghost sex.
What?
Yeah.
Is it like she's masturbating because she thinks his presence is there?
Nope, she starts having hallucinations of her dead fiancé and they full-on fuck. It turns out she has a brain tumor.
Oh, that's
But still,
bad.
Like, before that's revealed, it's just like, what are we watching?
Oh my God. Okay.
Well, on that note.
Yeah, I think that was a somewhat interesting conversation. You guys can let us know, I guess.
Please do.
But I could fucking talk about vampires all day. So please let us know if we can just like talk about Buffy more, if that's like something you would like. Yeah. And let us know if you like these types of discussion episodes and if there are topics that you would like to hear us discuss, because you know we love the sounds of our own voices.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to complain, baby?
I do.
Great.
So my complaint is, what is the opposite of petty?
Ooh, important.
Important.
Something that just doesn't happen very often on this podcast.
So it's really hard to like I had like this like list of like horrible things that have been happening in like politics and like the media recently. Mm-hmm. And we'll just kind of bum ourselves all out if we continue every single time. But something that happened recently that's like simultaneously good but also really fucking frustrating was, as I'm sure you know, Alex Jones and InfoWars was banned from Twitter and from other social media platforms.
Bye.
Which, thank fucking God. And the thing is that like, I'm not even entirely sure what happened to get him banned. But it just like comes down to the fact that like, I think it was something like kind of asinine. Mm-hmm. Whereas like for years, he was like the champion in trying to convince people that Sandy Hook was a hoax.
Right.
Which is probably...
That's really worth your time. Thank you.
Like, which is probably like one of the most like deplorable things that a human being has ever done. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me so fucking mad that that was okay because of like freedom of speech and like...
No.
And just, I think as like social media exists, I think there needs to be a reevaluation. And it kind of like also we talked about last week with Ariana Grande getting bullied on social media for Mac Miller, his death.
Yeah.
It's just like, there needs to be more accountability for people's behavior. And it's like, just because you can't like legally be prosecuted for saying certain things to try and get like national attention for telling a bunch of grieving parents that their murdered children didn't happen.
Right.
And that they are actors and that empty caskets were bare. It's just like, it's so fucking ludicrous. It's insane. It's gross. It's so gross.
And it's like, does he actually believe that? Or is he just doing this because people will listen and people will get worked up about it? Because
probably the latter.
And it's, but that's so terrifying, because the reality is a lot of fucking people are listening to him for whatever reason, because our country is... We're just really misguided right now, and people don't understand that not everyone who has a show on the television is right about everything.
Yep.
And he has, unfortunately, a big platform and a lot of power to be spouting absolute bullshit as if it were fact.
Oh, what's your complaint, Diva?
Okay, well, mine is the fucking pettiest thing especially in comparison to this. I just really want to talk about like transitional clothing.
Okay. And,
like, you know, when it's just that perfect time of year.
Oh, your phone just leapt to its death.
Yes. That perfect time of year where literally no matter what you wear, you're wearing the wrong thing for the weather that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if it's nice and warm one day and you're wearing a sweater because, like, of course, you're trying to get those fall vibes. You go outside, you're fucking sweating your ass off, and you're like, oh, tomorrow I'm going back to summer. And then the next day you're like in a little sundress, Grant. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I'm wearing a sundress right now.
And it's like, he's rocking it. It's like 50 degrees and windy, and you're like, oh my God, I'm fucking freezing. Like, tomorrow I'm going to wear a jean jacket. And then the next day you wear a fucking jean jacket, and it's fucking 90 degrees again.
Global warming at its finest.
It's just like, you can't win. The weather can't decide what it's doing.
What if we invent transition clothes?
Well,
like transitions lenses?
Like my clothes favorite.
That change when you go into a different climate. Like a jean jacket, like just like folds back into itself to become a crop top.
I mean, they have these zip-off pants, which is quite a look.
Start wearing those.
Yeah, can you imagine if every day I was just like, you know what? This is something that I have to do.
Like full-on like Scooby-Doo reveal.
Like I know it's not a great look, but my bottom half of my legs are cool. So... anyway
be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at RWF Podcast. Send us your emails, your spooky stories, etc. to rwfpodcast@gmail.com. And, you know, just tune in every Tuesday.
Yeah, and live that spooky life.
And let us know if you want to hear a whole episode about Buffy.
And eat candy corn. Because and, we love you. And
bye.
Bye, bitches. Bye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.